This is The Guardian.
I'm Bridie Jabbour, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is The Full Story, Newsroom Edition. A Guardian exclusive this week revealed the National Disability Insurance Scheme is set to be overhauled. Participants will now be assessed by a computer, with human oversight dramatically reduced. Advocates have called it a nightmare scenario for disabled people. And with future plans for automation in the public service on the cards, has the government learned anything from its past mistakes? Today, I'm talking to editor Lenore Taylor, head of newsroom Mike Tisher, and deputy editor Patrick Keneally about the dangers of taking the human out of human services. It's Friday, the 5th of December. Good morning, Lenore.
Morning, Bridie.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi, Bridie.
And good morning, Patrick.
Morning, Bridie.
So this week, The Guardian has revealed that a computer program will generate funding plans for NDIS participants with very little human involvement. What are the potential issues with this, Lenore?
Oh, quite a lot. This was an exclusive story by Kate Lyons, and the department says that this new tool will provide for sort of simpler and fairer assessments of NDIS applications. Basically, when someone's now going to apply to be an NDIS participant, they get assessed by a human, they have a questionnaire, and then all that information gets fed into this kind of computer tool and a plan gets spat out. And there's no human oversight at the end of that process. And even if you successfully appeal, any new information just gets fed back into the computer. So I guess the government is saying it'll be more standardised, it will reduce human error. But what a lot of NDIS participants and people in the sector say is, it's so complicated, the kinds of diagnoses people have, the kinds of medical information that needs to get fed in. Removing that human oversight is, in their minds, a really big problem. And I guess the government is trying to cap the NDIS budget because it's just going up and up. But they're doing it by trying to reduce people coming into the system rather than focusing on the fraud or the, you know, lack of oversight of how the services are delivered. And I guess that's another potential problem that people have with the approach.
And I think philosophically it's a step away from the foundations of why the NDIS was formed in the beginning, which was to really allow the government to give money, to give packages to people with disabilities and their families, and those people and those families to decide how that money should be spent in their own interests. In this way, it's a very templated approach to how the government funds these packages. I think there's questions around how much flexibility there'll be in there for, as Lenore says, different complex diagnoses, different complex needs
and families.
And if there's
anything complex, it's that kind of an application, right? It's inherently complicated.
Exactly, yeah. So, look, I think there's questions about how this will practically work when it comes into force mid-next year. Obviously, there are a lot of questions from advocates, from families around its operation.
As Laura alluded to, the context of this is the government is trying to save money from the NDIS budget, which has ballooned well beyond...
Which they need to, right? It can't be uncapped.
Yeah. Mark Butler spoke to us at the National Press Club a few months ago. He identified two kind of areas where that should happen. One was fraud, which no one could possibly be against, rooting out fraud in basically vulnerable people and the taxpayer. And the other was the huge growth in young people with, as he described it, mild to moderate developmental delays and autism coming onto the scheme, which has been the huge growth area in recent years. But this new program kind of makes people, I think that it's also going to be about moving people off the scheme who actually should be on it without any oversight. And that's why people are so upset about it.
And he put a target on. He said he wanted the growth in rate of new participants to come down from 12% to 5% to 6%. And it's not entirely clear what that is based on or what criteria that is based on.
But also just coming back to that point, I think about, you know, the fraud aspect of it, definitely people want that crackdown. But there's a real debate around whether it is a good thing to be limiting the amount of funding for children with mild to moderate developmental delays, things like autism, because where else do they turn for funding?
Well,
you know, state government funding has been,
right?
Has been cut in those areas. You know, there's supposed to be these foundational supports that the state governments and territories have been putting in place, but we're not seeing it at the moment. And, you know, families that go through crises and also the earlier that you can intervene in these processes, the better it is for children as well.
But so, I do think part of what the Commonwealth's dealing with is the NDIS was set up and it was sort of functional and people naturally turned to it because they could get help there. And the state governments then defunded or didn't fund programs that were supposed to sit side by side with it. I mean, that's part of what they're dealing with here as well.
And the government has had experience with automation before within the public service. What lessons should have been learned from those?
Robodebt. you know, like it's basically having human in human services. And this is a bit different from Robodebt, we need to say, to be fair, because in the NDIS case, there is a human involved in the assessment at the outset before it all gets fed into the machine, whereas Robodebt was robo sort of from the outset. But the Robodebt Royal Commission did recommend that there needed to be more oversight of automated decision making, not less. So I think there's just a sort of a general salutary lesson about what happens if you take human oversight away from really crucial human services.
We should be clear that there is a role for a certain amount of automation in these kind of extremely, you know, systems that are trying to deal with an awful lot of people would require massive amounts of staff to do it without any kinds of automation. And there can be a role in kind of standardizing, trying to make sure that people with comparable conditions get comparable outcomes. That part of it is entirely reasonable. And as we've reported before, the people who should be on the NDIS according to its criteria have struggled to get on it. And this is particularly the case for certain people, older people, women, and people in regional areas, as we reported recently, are disadvantaged compared with people with similar conditions. And that's the kind of thing that you would hope might be evened out by a level of automation. But obviously, the fear is that if it goes too far, then it's evening out too much and not taking into account people's particular circumstances, which is, as Patrick said, is the whole way the NDIS was supposed to be designed, that it is tailored to people's individual needs.
Yeah, I think another troubling aspect for families and advocates in this area is the limiting of the right to appeal in these circumstances. So if an assessment is made and it comes out and people are unhappy with it, basically they still have a right to appeal, but when that appeal is determined, it goes then back into the machine.
They can put more information
into it. But really it's still a computer making the assessment in the end.
And I think, you know, mostly people come to try to access these services at a time of great stress, you know, like you've been diagnosed with something or you've suffered something that gives you a disability or you're trying to access aged care or you're unemployed, you know, and you're trying to access Centrelink. So there's like a human need to have your needs heard, which makes it even harder when you're butting up against a machine.
The element of vulnerability in this particular case, I think, makes it especially serious as well. And The Guardian has also been reporting on automating of another service called RoboTax. There has been a lot of criticism of that scheme and the government paused it and then relaunched it. What has changed there since their initial concept of it?
This is something that Jonathan Barrett has been writing about for us for a very long time. And basically it's where the tax office has sort of put debts on hold for a really long time and often when the taxpayer didn't even know that they had a debt on hold. And then I don't know, when automation gets better or they revive that debt many, many, many years later, often so many years later that you're not even required to keep documentation anymore. And when that first happened, and Jonathan was writing a lot about it, it was criticised by the tax ombudsman and the government paused it. But now they're reviving it again to try and raise $5.3 billion from 325,000 taxpayers. Again, kind of by trying to, through automation, revive these uneconomical to pursue historical tax debts.
Yes, and it feels very unfair. Also, the money is taken out of potential refunds automatically. They've used debt collectors to try to recoup these debts, and it's just another example of people feeling kind of crushed and alienated by an uncaring bureaucracy that shouldn't be that hard to fix.
I think just picking up on another point you made about the outsourcing from the public service to private debt collection is a really big area that Jonathan Barrett has been doing some reporting on. So these debts go to private collection agencies who run call centres and people who are required to meet targets, ringing up and, you know, hassling people about their debts. And there's been kind of an interesting outsourcing from the public sector across a whole bunch of agencies like Centrelink. They're also outsourcing all these jobs around call centres and customer service roles, and they're also using AI to make some of these decisions on the back end. We don't know exactly to what extent, but that's certainly something that they're keen on doing, involving AI in trying to improve government services. But for people on the other end of it, if you're trying to get something done with Centrelink, it can be incredibly frustrating talking to someone who doesn't necessarily have the authority to solve the problem that you're coming up against.
That's if you're lucky enough to talk to someone.
Exactly.
Finding
yeah.
a human is yeah. the first challenge.
But the difference just in the past 8 years between having my first child and now, the difficulty in trying to talk to a human, I think, is hugely noticeable. But how do you think the government can strike a balance between dealing with vulnerable people and using automation in a useful way?
I mean, I think that's the big question, because obviously, you know, these huge service delivery departments, as Mike was saying, do use a degree of AI and automation and robotic processes and kind of need to do their jobs. Like, it's not unreasonable for them to be looking at that. But they need to have enough human oversight that the services work for the people trying to use the services. And getting that balance right is what's really hard. And I guess what sort of concerns me is that everyone's sort of looking at AI as this sort of economic panacea. I mean, even the GDP figures that came out this week show the economy was growing the fastest annual rate in more than 2 years because of investment in data centres and artificial intelligence. So if you're a politician or a business, like, this looks like, hello, here's the, you know, here's the path forward to profitability. But there's got to be a sense of what services are you giving to people and how will this impact on people? And with the lesson of robo-debt, how might it backfire?
It's really dangerous if people lose faith in big government organisations like the tax office, and, like, most people don't like paying tax. Some people disagree with it profoundly. Some people think it's kind of a necessary, you know, you should pay tax. But no one loves the tax office, right? But if you make it feel like it's pursuing people with minor debts and disregarding people with bigger debts. And similarly with the NDIS or with the welfare system, if people feel that it's targeting the people who it's kind of meant to be serving, if that's the impression that the public gets, then it kind of undermines people's faith in the big public bureaucracies, which is kind of undermining faith in government itself.
I think the big attraction for Labor in this is that they're under immense pressure to rein back public spending. Last week we learned that Katie Gallagher, the public service minister, had written to departments asking them to find 5% savings across their budgets. And departments are under immense pressure to reduce spending. They've also got the efficiency dividend of 1% per year. But they've got more demands from the public to deliver services. So how are they going to do that? How are they going to square that circle? And I think that's why AI and automated processes are so attractive to the government and to the public service at the moment.
Well, we're having this conversation in the same week the government has released their national AI plan. What did you make of it?
Well, it didn't have any proposal to have legislation or very sort of strict guidelines around high-risk AI uses, which I think is problematic. You know, this is a technology that is going to transform everything. It's going to be used by governments. I feel like there needs to be guardrails around it, and it didn't feel like there were very many.
It was all very vague, I thought. There was a surprising lack of detail in it. So the government's obviously very keen on the potential for AI in the public service. Katie Gallagher has also announced that the public service is going to build its own special AI program to be used within departments. They're rolling out the use of ChatGPT, Gemini, Copilot to departments. But interestingly, when they did a survey of public servants, most of them actually had a fairly poor experience with using it. Obviously, there's some potential there, but I think the Australian public probably deserves a bit more transparency around the use of AI in government.
Next, Sia, safety, and super styling.
I'm Barry Cassidy.
And I'm Tony Barry.
They say a day is a long time in politics. We've been away a couple of months, so a lot's happened in that time.
We had Spillvember. The Liberal Party found new ways to fail.
The government got its nature law through.
Barnaby kept on making about it himself. And the big story, the One Nation vote has doubled since the election.
So we're back. Two more episodes of Back to Back Barry's, the podcast.
That's a lot of backs.
Well, it is a lot of backs, but it's done now. Two special episodes before we come back next year. So that's this Saturday and next.
With a special guest on Saturday the 13th of December.
Have a look for us in the full story feed.